Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. My special guest is Kirby from the band Luck of Eden Hall. Kirby, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you on. I apologize for the earlier technical difficulties. It was very weird, and everything was in echo mode, and I'm not really sure if it was Skype or what it was, but I apologize for that, and I appreciate you calling back in, so thank you.
Oh, absolutely. No worries at all.
It's always something in the technical world that can come up and get you. But it's great to have you on. I just really appreciate you taking the time. I tell people about the Luck of Eden Hall. I think you guys are one of the best bands that I've heard in a long time. I'm just not saying that. I swear, this is a band that when I heard you guys, it was like, wow. I mean, I got a lot of questions. But first of all, I'd just like to, if we could just talk, Kirby, about the band and how it formed and, the genesis of the band a little bit and how the Luck of Eden Hall came together and maybe even talk about the other musicians that come together to make this band.
Okay. The Luck of Eden Hall formed years ago. Myself and Mark Lofgren, who plays bass and writes some of the songs with me and does all the video work for the band,
Okay.
are the original members from the band. And then there was the original drummer, Bruce Zimmerman, was one of my best friends from high school. And we all started the Luck of Eden Hall in 1989. And we kept it together. We had a couple different drummers. Paul Healy joined after Bruce Zimmerman was there, and then Joe Furlong came in, and Joe appears on the Belladonna Marmalade CD, which was our first, it wasn't our first real, well, it wasn't our first release. We had released full-length albums on cassette prior to that, but it was our first release that was on a CD, right?
Okay.
And that lineup with a cellist, Eric Remschneider, stayed together for a few years, and we called it quits in 1995, perhaps. Eric, who was playing cello with us, was snatched up by the Smashing Pumpkins, and he went on tour. And when we became like a three-piece, we kept it going for a little while, and then just things just weren't flying, So we decided to give it a break. That was, like I said, about 90, 95. And then in 2002, Mark and I got back together and started writing material. Actually, after in 95, I started a solo thing called Parkrone and released an album with that.
Okay.
Then in 2002, Mark and I got back together and started to write. And we put out the Subterrene record. That was just him and I. I played drums on everything. And after we did that, we didn't feel that we wanted to go out and play live. We just thought we'll get together and see how this works. And we sold them all. We sold a lot of copies of them. So then we recorded When the Clock Starts to Wake Up, We Go to Sleep. And when we put that one together, we knew it was time to play live. It just lit the fire under us again.
Wow, that's cool.
Absolutely. Got another drummer and started making it happen. And so that's basically the lineup right now. It's Carlos Mendoza on drums, myself on guitar and vocals, Mark Lofgren plays bass, and then we just recently added a mellotron player, Jim Licca, who plays mellotron and moog with us, and he's on a few tracks on the new record, Alligators Eat Gumdrops. So.
And that's cool. How important is it, Curvy, to get that right synergy of people together? It's like it sounds like you've worked, with different people through the years, it's kind of funny because a lot of people go through multiple drummers. I'm not quite sure why that happens, but
yeah, the Spinal Tap curse.
it's pretty wild. But
Yeah.
how do you know when you get the right guys? I mean, it's not easy, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You know when it does. What do you think that formula is, or what do you think is what makes you think, wow, yeah, this is it. This is going to work.
Yeah, for us, you want to be able to hang out with the person. You want to be able to have a good time other than just getting up on stage and working. You want to be able to have a good time off stage as well, and that really makes chemistry work. If you've ever listened to Pete Townsend, he used to lay out his demos, and I never knew that until he released these things back in the 80s, I think, some records, and they were his demo tracks from all the Who's hits. And we tend to do our music that way. I'll lay everything out, or Mark will lay stuff out, or we'll get together and lay all the parts out on demos, and then we learn it as a band. So we know where we're going to go with it. You know what I mean? It's not that we need the the other musician to come in and work the parts out and play for hours and hours or tour to make, you know, to get some chemistry going. We just need a player to come in and play. And now, that being said, some of the tracks would not be the tracks that they are without Carlos playing drums and Jim Licka, you know, playing his mellotron on them. So, you know, I hope that answers your question.
Oh, yeah, it does. And it's just kind of interesting to me because I kind of think of the psychology of a band. It's like, you know, I go here, I love listening to live music, and I listen to a lot of music. And, you know, it's cool, Kirby, is just to find out, you know, why you know, different musicians click and why they get work together. Because it's a very, you know, it's an emotional thing, you know, to share your music with people, and it's a part of art, and it's not like, you know, you have your regular work and your regular jobs, but you have to have people that, you know, are right there with you. And I think that also with your music, how do you feel about, like, have you ever had any issues with, like, sharing it with other people, knowing, okay, this is how, you know, I've got this music in my head, this is how I want it to sound? And when you're, you know, you said you're like putting the demos out and having other people play it.
Right.
Is that easy for you, or to do that, to share that with other people? And then how does it work when it doesn't come back exactly the way that you would like it? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it works easier for me because that way I can, I have the skeleton of the song worked out. So, and I don't write music. I could, but it would take me much longer to write it than it would to play all the parts and lay them down. So I tend to lay it out that way. I feel it that way, and I intuitively play some of the parts. They just come out. And I found that instead of working things to death and for me anyway, letting it just flow out, it's the first take is usually the best take.
Wow.
And yeah, so we keep things that way. And that way it keeps it fresh and live sounding, so that when we get in and we learn the parts and we play it, we're kind of taking it from that same stance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of I understand that. It's like when you're playing it and everybody is bringing what they've got to it and you're listening to it, that first, you know, time that people lay it out and start working on it. I mean, you could probably take any song, I would imagine, and kind of, you know, just keep going and going till you get it perfectly. But I guess, you know, that makes sense what you said about, you know, getting everybody's energy in it, putting it out there and seeing what it sounds like. Or does that make sense? Seeing what it sounds like. That didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
no, that's exactly it. That's, you know, that is why I lay everything out, because if you're trying to describe a taste to someone or a color to someone or a sound to someone, it's really difficult. And sometimes it's better to give them a tangible thing to listen to or see so that you can get everyone on the same page.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I can remember, you know, sometimes certain things will pop back. And when I did an interview, Kirby, of a band in Australia called Rudely Interrupted, and the person that's the lead singer and writes a lot of the songs is blind, and I was talking to him about it, and he was talking to me about writing a song in colors, but he'd never seen colors.
Yeah, it's cool. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it just really touched me. It was like, you know, these warmths, and he was talking about, like you were saying, trying to describe this, you know, he would feel this song inside of him, and then to get that out to other people. I thought that was pretty cool, how that works. So
right.
So when you talked a little bit about your songwriting style, but how does that work for you? I mean, do you do the music first, Kirby? Does that come first, or do you work the lyrics out when you're putting that together? And is there like a way that it always happens, or does it happen different ways when songs come to you, or you put together songs?
I would say there's different ways. If I had to pick one way, I would say that music comes first to me. The cool thing about having a cell phone that you can record on your voice, you know, or a message. So anytime a melody comes to me, I throw it down so that it's there for reference later on. So usually I would say that it's music that comes to me first. As far as inspiration and writing, you know, sometimes the song is developed on a bass guitar. I pick up the bass guitar. I play a lot of different instruments, so I can feel things out that way. So sometimes it's on the bass guitar. Sometimes the melody comes to me on the piano. Sometimes I pick up the sitar. The cool thing about that with me is if I get bored, I can get inspiration from picking up a different instrument, and then it sends me in a different direction.
Yeah, that's pretty good thing to have, to be able to play all the different instruments. So
yeah.
How did that start off with, I mean, did you grow up in a musical family, Kirby? How did that start out with you being, you know, musical and having the different influences that you have today?
Yeah, I didn't grow up in a musical family, and I guess I would blame it all on the Monkees TV show.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's I've heard that before, actually.
It touched my soul, you know. I was a TV junkie when I was little, and then that was one of the things that definitely did it for me. That and one of my mom's sisters was getting rid of a lot of her records at a garage sale, and I snagged a whole bunch of Stones and Beatles and, you know, things on Karma Sutra Records, all these different 45s when I was little, and those really sent me in the direction of rock music. So.
Yeah. Do you remember one record or one song, Kirby, that, like, from the collection that you got that just, like, got your attention immediately, that was like, wow?
Yes. I like Get Off My Cloud by the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, that's a cool song.
Yeah. And at the top of my lungs, you know.
Yeah, and this kind of makes me think of, we started the show off with 10 Meters Over the Ground, and that horn section in that, talk about that, because I think that's really cool. I've got my own thoughts about that, but tell me how that came in, and who plays the horn on that, and how you know, integrated that into the song.
Yeah, I had that track just about wrapped up, and the way that I do things is I record it, take it into the car, and then listen to it like crazy until it's, you know, driven my brain insane, and I've thought up the other parts that are either there, you know, just all these ghosts of parts come to me. And this horn section part came to me, and I thought, man, that would be really cool to have. That would make something different about this record, because we've never used a horn section on there. And our drummer, Carlos, knew Mars Williams, and so he got in touch with Mars, and Mars came over and laid down the horn tracks for it.
Oh, it's really cool. So, was there any song or anything in particular that you were thinking of in that, or is it just something you thought would be cool to fit into that particular song? I mean, was there any influences or anything?
I'd say the sound that I wanted from the horns, or that I was going for, was Magical Mystery Tour era Beatles. That's what I was going for. Whatever anyone else hears, that's beautiful. But what I was going for was that particular thing.
Oh, yeah. Just recently I've been listening to a lot of Bobby Keys stuff. And, I mean, just it's kind of amazing, you know, how he played with Harrison, and he was the guy with on all the Stones and played,
right.
You know. And I think he's kind of forgotten, you know. It's like,
sure, right.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
this guy could walk through the malls and people would know him from Adam, but
right,
my
right.
Gosh, I mean, and that's why I was saying that, that's what I thought of when I heard that. I thought, man, that kind of sounds like a Bobby Keys type horn section in there. And so I think that's really awesome how that integrated in there. But I think what we'll do is take a short music break, and my guest is Kirby from the Luck of Eden Hall, and you can go out on the website, theluckofedenhall.com, and the latest release is Alligators Eat Gumdrops. And is there anything you'd like to say about that, Kirby, where they can purchase the record, and I know there's some other projects and things going on. Maybe it's a good time to talk about that.
You can purchase that if you want to get it directly from the band on our Bandcamp page.
Okay.
The luckofedenhall.bandcamp.com, and then you use PayPal to pay for it there. If not, it's available in a slew of other places. It's on iTunes and CD Baby and Amazon. It's Clear Spot distribution in Europe and Heyday mail order in Europe. And, you know, it's available. It's out there many places.
Yeah, that's, and I just really encourage everyone to pick it up. You will not be disappointed if you haven't heard it before. It's just one of the best I've heard in a long time, and I really encourage people to pick it up. And is there, yeah, and Christmas is coming, Kirby, so people should be able to get one, at least one for each one of their friends. What do you think?
Sure.
At least one, yeah. Well, let's play a song off of Alligators Eat Gumdrops, and this is Strange. Do you want to talk about this before we play it?
This is Strange, yeah. I put that together. That one came about with a riff that I was playing with my Echoplex. So you'll hear the jong 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 jong. That's an Echoplex feeding that back. And I really liked it. The song was built up around that.
Well, this is Strange, and this is the Luck of Eden Hall. My guest is Kirby. We'll be back with the interview with Kirby after this song, so don't go anywhere.
Thanks, John.
The artist has a special temperament, and he must live his life exclusively with those who understand it.
I understand, monsieur.
You'll find that music has its compensations, my dear.
I've got friends, said the
My guest is Kirby from the band The Luck of Eden Hall, and we're talking about Alligators Eat Gumdrops, and we just heard This Is Strange. And Kirby, I was thinking about the sound of the band, and you know, when you kind of, when I think of some of the influences I hear in your music, do you think sometimes with the current state of music today, and you know, 2012, and we could talk about that, and we could talk about the, and actually I want to get into the business of music here in a minute, but it to me, you know, I can hear the retro sound going back into, you know, the influences of the 60s and 70s. Do you think sometimes, and hopefully this makes sense, in order to go forward with music, you have to kind of go back? Does that make sense? I mean, to get to a place where it really means something. I mean, a lot of the music that I hear today, I'm not really sure if it has the truth of the music that I heard maybe in the 60s and 70s and that honesty.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I very rarely hear things on the radio that make my ears perk up these days. Not to say that there's not a lot of awesome stuff out there. Maybe it's just what the radio, you know, tends to play.
Yeah, that's a point. Yeah.
Yeah. I decided to just make music that I like, and not try to follow any trend, and not try to do something because I had to do it, because I figured if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it because I wanted to do it.
Right.
And so I've, these last 5 or 6 years, I've gotten my production skills to where I feel I can create the sounds that I have in my head on the sonic canvas, so to speak.
Right.
And, that's what I'm doing. I'm just taking it like that.
Yeah, and that's cool. Do you have, like you talked about kind of the music up today, and I know that there are some good things out there going on today, and I've kind of was kind of hinting around about the popular music that's there, and some of the, I guess maybe it's just that I'm getting older and it doesn't make any sense to me, but I'm not sure if that's part of it. It could be.
Let's not admit that.
but I think, you know, sometimes I go back and I try to think of, you know, some of the music, like you said, that your ears perk up. It's like you think, oh my gosh, it's like stimulating. It's like,
right.
You know, it's not something that's going to just think, oh, that's pretty cool, and, you know, I could listen to that again. But
right.
And that's what I hear in your music, and I'm being truthfully honest with you about that. It's like when I heard it, I thought, yeah, this is, you guys are you're doing things that to me are pushing the boundaries a little bit. It's kind of interesting because when you're writing and putting the music together, and I think you might have just answered it, Kirby, but you're talking about you're just making music that makes yourself feel good, and
right.
You have pretty good taste of music, so you know what I mean? It's going to produce that. So I don't know if that makes sense to me, but I mean, to you, you're making music that, oh yeah, that you're doing that so that sounds good to you. Now,
right.
On the Alligators Eat Gumdrops, was there a song that on that album, once you did that, you thought, did you get an oh my God moment on any of your songs? Or, I mean, does that make sense too? I mean, some songwriters tell me when they're putting a song together or recording it, they think, wow, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Right, right, right. Like I really nailed that one or something.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, let's go for that track that you just played. I had that track finished, at least I thought it was, and it almost wasn't going to make the record. I was like, man, you know, there's just something about this track that it's a rock song, and it's all right, but it's a little too rock for me, and I, you know, it wasn't making it for me. And then I ran it through the flanging, you know, I had to put the flanging on some of the on the verses, I think is what I put it on. And as soon as I put the flange on there, I was like, oh man, this is it. and then I added the talking over the singing part, you know, the talking vocal. And as soon as I did that, I thought it took it into Hendrix land, and I was like, that's nice. Now I like it. You know.
Yeah,
I guess that's sort of what you're talking about. I think the track on there that really made my spine shiver when I was finished with it was the first one, High Heeled Flippers.
Yeah, that's a very cool song.
Yeah.
I mean, and I this is a question, you know, you got to, sometimes my questions can go out there a little bit, but when you're writing it and you're thinking, you know, and like getting this, yeah, that's pretty cool. Are you trying to hit something, or are you just like, you know, what are your, I know that with music, there are no boundaries, right? It's an ocean.
Right.
So that's the coolest thing about it to me. It's just like, you know, people can go places where, like I said, Hendrix went and where John Lennon went and where these guys went, that a lot of people have lost the way to get there, to that point where it, like, pushes things. And it makes you, you know, I tell people, you know, when I – some albums that I heard for the first time, it's like, are you experienced as one that you just – there's hardly any words to put to it. It's like, what did I just hear? You know, what happened? And so when you're writing the music, are you using that – any kind of structure, or are you just saying, I'm going to go out there and, like, break down as many barriers as I can and just make the best music possible? Is that...
Yeah, music haunts me 24 hours a day. It's always in my head. I'm always tapping on something or humming something. And I tend to lay down a lot more than I use. And we even take some things almost to the final stages and before we say, oh my God, you know, this is crap, man, it's not gonna work, you know. And that's all right though, because that way we take the pick of the litter and we put together an album, and we feel that it's a strong album that way, instead of putting every, you know, like, if we only had the songs that we had written and this is all we had to make an album with, I tell you, the last few albums wouldn't have been what they are, but since we had so many songs to choose from and we could pick the best ones, it really made these last few records strong.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, because a lot of times people will tell me, you know, it was kind of difficult to choose, you know, the songs for the album because there were so many. Do you look at that, Kirby, as like the songs are like a part of you? And, you know, I've heard, you know, songwriters say that, you know, it's like an extension of themselves, and, you know, it's sometimes it's kind of difficult to get those out there. Do you feel like that? And when you're choosing the album, do you think, oh, I left this one off, maybe I shouldn't have done that? And does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. And this last record, there was a track that I really liked and my wife really liked called Queen of the Stars. And for the people that prepaid and helped us pay for this record, I think like the first 70 people, I gave that track away for free.
Wow.
To them for helping out. And it was supposed to be on the record, and one of our team said that it wasn't strong and that it's a stronger record without it, so I took it off. I didn't hem and haw about it. I was like, well, that's that outsider's opinion, told me what they felt. I'm too close to the work to give my honest opinion. You know, a lot of times I've been working for hundreds of hours on some of these things, and I love it or I hate it so much I don't know what to think anymore, right? So
no,
it's like, well, if I have someone tell me what's the right thing to do, sometimes that really helps out.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And when I've interviewed people, Kirby, they'll say, like, you know, they've got the music, and then, like, they'll hire, you know, a producer or somebody to come in that is not attached to, and say, you know, you need this direction, you need that direction, you need to do this,
yeah,
you need to do that. I personally don't think I would be very good at that, but do you think that helps you grow? I mean, as a musician, to get that type of opinion that may not be what you're looking for?
Yeah, I suppose so. You know, in the end, I'm just going to go and do what I want anyway, because it's my baby.
Yep.
You know? And I'm going to raise it the way that I want it, the way that I see fit.
No matter what your aunt tells you, or your uncle,
yeah,
or, yeah.
That's right. That's right. Because what the hell do they know anyway, you know? But that being said, you know, when I take the songs, when we're making the final order of the album, if they aren't flowing one after the other, if there's a track that we loved but that just doesn't seem to fit, we don't really have a problem yanking it off. Because with the way that the industry is now, or the way that technology is, if you want to release it, you can. You can just put it out there.
Yeah.
You can give it away for free. You can post it. You can do whatever you want with your tracks, you know. It might not be a part of that package, but in the end, if you want people to hear it, you can get it out there to them. So it's a wonderful time.
It's a lot of, there's a lot of things going on in the music world. What do you think the best part, Kirby, of being a musician in 2012 is?
Wow, the best part of being a musician in 2012 is probably what I just said. The fact that I can write this stuff, and once I get it to the point that I want to release it, I can almost release it instantly if I want to. That being said, it's kind of funny because I've had a conversation with a person the other day, and they were saying that that means what that's done is it's opened the gateways to a lot of crap.
I've heard that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, well, you know, there was a lot, believe me, when there were all the avenues that had to be gone through and, you know, paying $10,000 or more, you know, $20,000 to record a record, you know, even though you had to jump all those hurdles, come on, tell me the 70s, 80s, 90s didn't produce a lot of shit. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of buy that, but, you know, that's all right because if there's more to choose from. That's okay.
So what do you think the most challenging part of being a musician in 2012 is?
Yeah, the most challenging part. Back when we released Belladonna Marmalade, it was in a time when if you put something out on vinyl or on a CD, it got you in the door. So you could go, you know, if you shipped that to clubs, they were like, oh, this is on a CD. These guys are in. No, seriously, I'm serious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, it's so much more difficult. You can have vinyl up the yin-yang and still not get a show in one of the local venues that you used to play all the time because of, because there are so many bands out there. So that's one of the difficult things. There are tons of bands and tons of people working really hard and trying to make it.
Yeah, and that's another good point because it kind of breaks into what I was thinking about with the music industry today. And, you know, I interview a lot of musicians, and I know that I don't think people understand, Kirby, the work that goes into it. And it's not just these are, you know, a bunch of guys playing instruments, and they're just all fun and games. It's very hard, and it's rewarding. And if you've got the music bug, you know, you're not going to get rid of it anyway, so you've got to move forward. But it isn't the easiest thing to do to lay down a lot of things and just say, hey, I'm going to be a musician today. But also, on the other hand, it's pretty rewarding. So with the release of the album and, you know, we talked briefly about the video and the audio part of it, and I think you were talking about, how you get the videos out there.
Right.
Is it difficult to do that when you're writing the music? You're getting the music together, the band's playing it, you're recording it. Are you thinking in your head what the video could be like? And also, you could also take that same vein of thought and like, are you thinking about how it's going to translate to a live crowd? So, or are those two things, that they come later on?
Those come later on with me. I know that when we finish a song, sometimes Mark will have an idea for a video or I'll have an idea for a video. That never happens, you know, but it's the image of the finished song that helps create the idea for a video. As far as the live performance, some songs we don't play live because they don't translate to the four-piece act. We've played 10 Meters Over the Ground live because our Mellotron player covers the parts, the saxophone parts, on his Mellotron.
Okay.
It sounds really cool. Songs like Chrysalide, which were on Butterfly Revolutions Volume 1. That was the opening track. When that was recorded, we didn't have the Mellotron player, and I had a pedal, electroharmonic pedal, synthesizer pedal that helped create an organ sound while I was playing.
Okay.
So you get this organ sound at the same time. But as soon as Jim joined the band, it transformed that song into something far better than was recorded on the album, and the live version is just fabulous now. There's a few live versions of that on YouTube from different radio shows and things that we've played on. So,
so how does it, like, I know it's a lot of work, and what we've talked about so far is, like, you, your passion for music, and when you talk, Kirby, about being haunted by music, I was kind of smiling because I feel the same way, and I feel like it's always in my head. It's like constantly, you know, I'm thinking of this song and that, and it's like, I guess it, I sometimes wonder if that's normal or not, but it's good to hear that it happens to you too.
Right,
so,
right.
So that's kind of cool. What I'd like to do is take another break, and I like to play Crystal Light. That's just such an awesome song. But you were talking about it translating live, and what is it when you play live that, you know, is it, this is what other people have told me, Kirby, when they're playing, it's their reaction to the music. And what is it that you like the best about playing a live gig?
I like the volume.
Yeah,
I like the way the amps sound when they're turned up to 11, you know. I just like it. It's and also playing with other people live sometimes can just be wonderful. Sometimes it can be a horror because you can't hear what you want to hear. You know, you can't hear the bass player, or you, or the Moog is too loud in the monitors, you know, or sometimes your vocals aren't, you can't hear your voice. But sometimes when everything clicks perfectly, it's the best part about making music.
Well, my guest is Kirby from the band The Luck of Eden Hall, and we're going to play Crystallite, and this is a great song. This is from one of the earlier albums that you had. This is a Butterfly Revolution, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Volume 1.
Volume 1. And the website is luckofedenhall.com. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on, what future things are happening, what exciting projects are going on with the band. And stick around. We'll be right back after this song.
Would you like to make the evening news? Tighten up your wires and your screws. Your look is determined and confused. Delicately wipe off all the dust. Paint another coat over the rust. Shed another tear here if you must. Hold on to me, crystal.
Well-adjusted mental, the obscure.
My guest is Curvy. The band is The Luck of Eden Hall. And Curvy, what's going on? What are the new projects? What's the band working on now?
Right now, we're gearing up for a TV performance. We have a TV show we're going to be on the 9th of October. It's called Seven on Ridge. And I believe the call letters of the station that it's on are WJYS out of Indiana.
Okay.
And we're working on that. We've got two releases coming out on Frutimer Records. One is an EP that's going to include Bangalore and This Is Strange on one side. And on the other side, we've covered The Doors' Crystal Ship and a band called SRC from Detroit in 1968, a track called Black Sheep. The other EP we're going to be on Frutimer Records is a tribute to the Beatles' White Album.
Wow.
So it's 2 7-inches, you know, 2 7-inch records. There's probably, let's see, that would be 8 songs total because each 7-inch has 4 songs on it. And we're on there with the Bevis Frond and the Pretty Things and a slew of other awesome psych bands. So those two things are coming out before the end of the year. And then Clear Spot in the Netherlands is going to release Butterfly Revolutions Volume 1 and 2 on a double vinyl LP for early 2013. So those are the things that I have going on right now.
Wow, that's awesome stuff. Where can people keep up to date on that on your website? Is there another place they can look at updates on when that's available?
Yes, our Facebook page, I'll keep everyone updated on that. You can go to frutimerrecords.com. It's spelled Fruits de Mer Records, Fruits of the Sea, frutimerrecords.com. Clear Spot, I believe that's clearspot.com. Either way, if you go to our website or our Facebook page, we'll give you the information you need.
Now, when you're doing the 7-inch vinyl on Tribute to the White Album, what songs are you playing on that?
Oh, we picked Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey.
I love that song.
yeah, I know. That, you know, that was one of my all-time favorite records of all time. I mean, if I had to pick a record to take to a desert island, it'd be hard for me to pick, but that one would be right up there because it covers so many genres of music, and that's one of the reasons why I always loved that record. It's all over the place.
It is.
Yeah,
and I always like Me and My Monkey. It's like that's just perfect Lennon. You know, it's like just kind of, you know, his sarcasm and his humor with his just kind of raw rock and roll, which it seems kind of simple, but it isn't. How did you guys approach that? I mean, did you approach that, Curvy, as like, okay, we're going to take this song, we're going to, you know, make it the Luck of Eden Hall, or were you thinking more of in a tribute respect?
Yeah, it's the Luck of Eden Hall. I don't know if you're familiar with Frutimer Records.
I am.
Yes, right, and they specialize in doing releasing new versions of old psychedelic songs, right?
Right.
And very, what I want to say, I didn't take it from left field. You know, I didn't approach it and just totally dismantle the song and rework it. It sounds like Everybody's Got Something to Hide except for Me and My Monkey. There are certain aspects of the songs that have changed. I've changed some of the sounds in the songs, in the song. You know, we beat on frying pans and things to create the to create the percussive sounds, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that it has to be. When you do that, and you put the song out there and you listen to it, does it make you like think, wow, where is that music today? And I know you guys are bringing that back, but that's what I was just trying to say earlier in the interview was music like that is like hard for me to find right now. And for, you know, for not just for, you know, being a Beatles freak or anything like that, but, you know, I think it's just the music, it was, you know, I guess a Renaissance type period, maybe people could argue whether it was or not, but, when you play other songs, like I think you talked about the Doors also, Kirby, how do you approach that also? I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, you're going forward with your music and then you're kind of going back and visiting some of these, you know, great artists' music. And also, I just kind of interested in, like, when you were recording Everybody's Got Something to Hide But Me and My Monkey, what kind of gear were you using? Did you fit that to the gear that the Beatles might have used then or not?
We always use the same gear when we record, and we use vintage gear. I've got an old Dual Showman amplifier.
Wow.
And I use Echoplexes. I've got two Echoplexes. We use real Mellotron, you know, the fuzz pedals and things that I use. It's old Electro-Harmonics fuzz pedals. So, you know, some of the sounds, once again, might not be the gear that they used on that record, but I approached things from that. Those sounds are what I have in my head. I think when I write when I produce the Luck of Eden Hall songs, when I write music for the Luck of Eden Hall, I am taking those old sounds and I'm doing something new with them. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Have you ever had something in your head, Kirby, that you couldn't translate into music? A song?
Wow. Yes, I did in the past, many times in the past, because I had no idea what I was doing. But in the last few years, like I said, I think I've gotten my production quality to the point where I can make it happen.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Have you ever had a song, and I ask this to probably every songwriter I interview, have you ever had a song come into your mind and then it got away and you just couldn't get it back?
As far as writing a song?
Right, yep.
Oh, yes. Never lie in bed with a song stuck in your head and think, oh, yeah, it'll be there in the morning. It's not. It's not.
Oh, isn't that funny? It's like you're thinking, man, this song's really cool. This is going to be, you know, the greatest song ever. And then you're thinking, I can't get anything back. But Kirby, it's been great having you on. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on. The Luck of Eden Hall, the Alligators Eat Gumdrops is the album. I encourage everybody to go out on luckofedenhall.com and you can purchase the album, and there's a lot of cool things coming up at the end of this year and going on next year with the band, and go on Facebook and the band will keep you up to date on things. Kirby, is there anything you'd like to say to the fans or people out there, you know, to finish up the interview? I know there's a lot of loyal fans out there that really appreciate your music. Anything you'd like to just leave the audience with?
First off, I'd like to say I'm honored, truly honored, to be able to get this stuff out and to have people like yourself tell me that it's good. I really am. It makes my day. It makes me feel wonderful. And I'm honored to be able to touch people in a way that makes them happy. If my songs make you feel good, then I've done more than I ever thought that I could. So, you know, thank you. Thank you for the interview.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. My guest is Kirby from the band Luck of Eden Hall, and we'll keep up to date, Kirby, on what's going on and what's happening with the band. And I really appreciate you taking the time and say hi to the guys in the band. And we'll talk to you later. Thank you. And we're going to go out with the song This Is Summertime Girl. Do you have anything you'd like to say about that song before we play it?
Oh, I'm glad you picked that one. That's a track that Mark Lofgren wrote, and, you know, It's a beauty.
It's a good song, and I really highly encourage people to to go out and purchase Alligators and eat gumdrops. It will not disappoint you. It's one of the best albums of 2012 that I've heard. And I, Kirby, thanks so much, and have a great evening. And we'll talk to you later on.
All right. Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure.
And we're going out with "This Is Summertime, Girl" with Luck of Eden Hall. And everybody have a great evening, and we'll talk to you later.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.